September 7th, 2005, item number 84. Today's guest is Steve Ely from the Escape Pod Podcast.
Podcast411.com. Listen different.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Rob, and this is the Podcast 411 Podcast. Before we get into the interview with Steve, a couple quick news and notes. First, I'd like to mention I just interviewed yesterday Victor from the Typical PC User podcast, and on September 7th, which is today, he will be airing his show number 50, so go ahead and check it out. I'll have the interview with him up sometime next week. Also, Peter Chen sent me an email for a survey for podcasters to fill out. He's with Monash University in Australia, and he's trying to gather some information on podcasters and what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing. I'll have a link for that in the show notes, and as always, show notes can be found at podcast411.com. And then finally, this Saturday, September 10th at 4 p.m., if you're in the Kansas City area, it's time for our monthly Kansas City Podcaster Meetup, and this month, again, will be at Tom Fullery's. Again, Saturday, September 10th, 4 p.m., Tom Fullery's on the plaza. If you're in Kansas City area, I'd love to see you at the meetup. Well, that's going to do it for the news and notes. We're going to go ahead and get into the interview with Steve from the Escape Pod Podcast. Here we go. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
First question, what was your first computer?
Oh, when I was five, my dad got a kit to build a Sinclair ZX80. I'm not sure if that's a first for you or not.
Adam Curry was a ZX80.
A ZX80, really?
Yes.
Not the ZX81?
No, not the ZX81. He was a ZX80.
Yeah, this was the one with, I think it was 1K of RAM or 2K. I can't remember which. And of course, it had the little basic commands on top of the keyboard. Eventually, he actually got the chip to upgrade it to the ZX81, which is the equivalent of the IMX Sinclair 1000 over here. And then we got that 16K memory block in the back. And I remember thinking, who could ever actually use 16K of memory? What am I going to do with all that? Because none of the programs I'd written were that long, but mostly there were the 10, you know, print, hello kinds of things. So.
Well, how you know, it takes a long time of coding in BASIC to get to 16K.
It does.
What was the first podcast you listened to?
I was racking my brain about this earlier today. It was either The Dragon Page or Dawn and Drew or The Bitterest Pill. I had heard about podcasting. I grabbed all three of those at about the same time, and I can't remember which one I actually listened to first.
Nowadays, what podcasts are you listening to on a regular basis?
Way too many of them. I got Mer Lafferty's Geek Fu Action Grip.
Which is one of my favorites also.
Yeah, she's narrated for us too. So yeah, she's real cool.
I know that, actually that was a really good episode she narrated. You picked a really good one
good.
For her.
Oh good.
I
yeah,
like
she's
that. Clean up your room. It was a good episode.
Great. She'll be coming back in the next week or two.
Oh,
I've got another story for her. So there's her. I've got the Monster Feet Variety Show is my latest new comedy podcast.
I haven't heard that one.
That's a great one.
Okay.
It's this Canadian guy does it from his bedroom, and it's about an 8-minute sketch comedy show.
Oh, sure.
So it's the absolute perfect length. He does it every Monday, and he really is funny. That's about the one really good comedy cast I'm listening to these days. Of course, all three of the Dragon Pages now that they've split out. Your show, of course.
Well, thank you.
List of, you know, Nuketown, Radioactive, Rev Up Review, basically all the science fiction podcasters. Not just because most of them played my promo one time or another.
I noticed Paul from Rev Up Review, he narrated one of the
yes.
earlier stories.
Yes, he's also narrated for us. And I'm going to be sending him another story as well. Possibly one I wrote. Because Escape Pod actually has a policy. We don't let authors read their own stories. And
okay.
So as a result, if I'm going to have one of my stories podcast on the thing, and I have maybe one story out of several I've written that might actually be suitable for the podcast. So I got to get someone else to read it. So I'm passing it off to him because it might work well, pretty well in a British voice. Yeah, he's got a great audiobook kind of tone.
This will lead us into, why don't you go ahead and explain what your podcast is all about, what people hear.
Okay. We call ourselves the Science Fiction Podcast Magazine. Essentially, what we do is every week we present science fiction short stories, or fantasy, or horror, just the general speculative fiction genre. We pay the authors for the stories. We buy non-exclusive audio rights from them. And I narrate them, or I get one of several other people to narrate them. And we wrap it up into a podcast and give it out to people.
Now, I noticed you mentioned on the show that you take in PayPal donations to help offset the costs of paying the authors. Does it actually offset the cost, or how much?
Surprisingly, yes. Within the last month or so, we've actually done just a little bit better than breaking even at this point.
Great.
With the donations we've gotten through. And, of course, every time I say that, then I go out on a spree and buy a whole bunch more stories. So it's kind of a delicate balancing act, but people have been very, very generous with this. I think it's probably because I do make clear that the money is going strictly towards buying stories for the podcast. So they know where their money's going, and they know that I don't have an infinite wallet myself to go and buy that out of my own funds. So everyone, I think, gets a good feeling out of supporting the podcast.
How are the authors' receptiveness to you reading their stories? How has it been?
It's been great. We had a lot of real name authors very early on, as soon as I announced this in some of the science fiction market zones, come back to us. And people are really excited about it. I think just the novelty of having one of their short stories read out loud, because there really aren't any audio markets for short fiction in science fiction. I mean, if you have novels, obviously, yeah, plenty of audiobooks out there, but very little in the way of short stories. And so this is a good opportunity for them. They're always happy to get more listeners out there. The money isn't much, but I do have a real contract. It's based off the Science Fiction Writers of America model contract. And so I pay people for the stories.
Okay. And how did you figure out what to pay them?
I logged into NetBank and looked at my checking account balance and figured out what I could manage to actually afford. And basically, for a full-length short story, we pay $20 a story. And for flash fiction, we also frequently, it's not on a regular weekly basis, but very frequently, we'll also do very short stories that are under 1,000 words as kind of a Monday or Tuesday bonus feature. Yep, for those, we pay $5. So, I mean, no one's going to retire on the kind of money we're paying. But then that's probably true for most science fiction markets. What was really important to me was that we set ourselves above the level of like the non-paying zine thing, because there's a very big mindset in the writing field that if you're getting paid for your work, then it's legitimate. And if you're just getting kind of credit for it or copies for it or something like that, then that's considered more at the fan level. I wanted to attract the serious writers who, even though I can't afford to pay them professional rates, at the very least they're getting something for it and there's a contract for it. So it comes across as a real sale, as a real market. And as a result, we're getting treated within the science fiction community as a real serious market as well. We're getting the attention of other editors. And just generally, we're getting a pretty good reputation at this point. I'm very happy with it.
How did you come up with the whole idea of the format for this, to do this? What was your background that would lead you to do a show like this?
Well, I'm a writer myself, was probably the prime motivator for it. I've got a few published short stories out there and various anthologies probably nobody's heard of. I've got a novel out making the rounds in the New York publishers. And so I've been fairly connected to that community already. And when I heard about podcasting back in February, it was a lot of fun. And of course, there's a certain percentage of people, as soon as they hear a podcast, they start thinking, oh yeah, I got to do one of those. And so I started kicking around ideas, trying to think of things that nobody had tried before. And my first one was like a little podcast fiction, like a robot, a household robot doing a podcast or something like that. And I kicked around a few ideas like that and trying to think, okay, what would really draw an audience? I could just rant about politics for 10 minutes, but what makes my politics better than anybody else's and worth listening to? And then I thought, well, nobody's podcasting science fiction right now. People are podcasting about science fiction, but no one is actually presenting science fiction stories, except for a few audio books. The things like T. Morris is doing, people like podcasting in their own novels and such. And once I thought of that, just kind of the idea sort of put itself together. I mean, as I said, I was kind of taking it as a given that you have to pay the authors for their work. So from there, the donation model pretty much evolved naturally. Just generally, it all started working out. It took me a few weeks to kind of scrabble together a halfway working equipment set. Yeah, go through the first dozen takes of the first story so it wouldn't sound like total crap. It only sounds like about 50% crap now.
How long do you think it takes for each podcast, from the time you look at the title of a story to the time you finally get the story done? And that includes reading it, contracting for it, all in doing it, actually, and then editing it and putting it up. How much time do you think you're putting into each one?
Let's see. By that time, most stories have been read by two different people. So that's probably at least an hour of reading and then letting the author know about it. The contract side, it doesn't take too long, but generally I do a whole bunch of them at once. Then really, of course, the serious time is in recording it, re-recording it if needed, editing the recording, because I edit the hell out of my shows. My standards that I'm shooting for are audiobook standards, essentially. So every and overlong pause gets clipped out of everything. And so probably it takes twice as long to edit the story as it does to record it. And that's assuming you recorded it in just one take, which is fairly uncommon. So probably the whole thing, probably about 5-6 hours goes into each one.
You said you edit heavily. Are you a GarageBand user?
No, I tried GarageBand. You know, I really respect the people who can intuitively grok GarageBand. I'm not one of them. I just couldn't really get the hang of their interface. Right now, because we're running on basically no money except what goes to the authors, I'm doing Audacity for all of my editing. It does the job well. It's a good tool. It's relatively time inefficient, so I'm looking for a chance to upgrade to something like Soundtrack Pro or BIOS or one of those, one of the higher end packages.
I have Soundtrack Pro. I have Logic Express, and I have GarageBand. Mm-hmm. And I found to edit out ums and uhs, GarageBand was actually the easiest.
Okay.
Just personally for me.
Okay. Maybe I just didn't really find the zen of it.
I would suggest if you're going to use GarageBand, you go out and get the book, and it's called GarageBand: The Hidden Manual. Go read it cover to cover, and if you do that, you will know GarageBand. You will understand the little things that are hidden that, like you said, they're not intuitive. I would not know what I'm doing if it wasn't for that book. And they have a new one out, GarageBand 2, The Hidden Manual. So I highly recommend that to anybody who's on a Mac. Let's not forget, tell people where to find it. Now you have the easier URL.
Yes, we have the slightly easier URL, which is www.escapepod.info. So we're one of maybe the three domains that actually have a .info domain now that those have risen up. I'm still in attempting to get the .org domain. I found out in late June it was going to expire in August. Couldn't get in touch with the guy. The email address was dead. So I figured I'll just wait till it expires. Then I found out that the process to get a hold of an expired domain name is just another circle of hell. You have to sign up with three different companies that specialize in just slamming the servers, the internet, the registry people as soon as it comes up. So you pretty much have to go competitive with them. So anyway, escapepod.org, anyone listening to this, don't bid against me, please. I want this domain.
All right. I have a subject matter here I'm sure you want to talk about, and it was with regards to an article that was written by John Dvorak, and it is Dvorak.
Ah, yes.
And CC licenses. What would you like to say about that?
I had a little rant in my intro about that, and basically that there's a lot of people out there, especially in traditional media, and I find it even in media more often than in the creative community, that just do not get the point of Creative Commons licensing. Escape Pod releases under a Creative Commons license, the attribution non-commercial, no derivatives. And I've gotten used to not tripping my tongue over that because I say it at the end of every one. The reason we do that is because I decided philosophically very early on that any attempt of mine to make any kind of money off of distributing the podcast, off of expiring old shows and selling CDs off of them, or doing any kind of subscription basis or anything like that, was only going to limit my audience. What I really want to do instead is get as wide, as broad an audience as I possibly can, and then just rely on the good graces of that audience to donate to us, to support us, if they like us. And so I release under Creative Commons with the intent being that anyone who gets hold of one of my files, I want them to share it. I want them to broadcast it to the world. What Creative Commons does, it doesn't limit anybody's rights. It doesn't limit fair use. It doesn't limit anything that copyright already gives you. It's just convenient legal boilerplate for specifying the terms under which somebody else can give something away.
Is there any downside if you're a podcaster? What would be the one thing, if you're a podcaster, that people seem to be the most concerned about with Creative Commons? Or the biggest misconception, maybe?
Well, obviously, absolutely, you have to own them. You have to have the rights to release the material in the first place.
Okay.
I mean, if you have copyrighted material and then you're releasing your own thing under Creative Commons, that probably just makes things that much harder on you. If anybody decides to bring the hammer down on you, which is why I'm very careful to contract with my authors. I specify, this is how we're going to release it under Creative Commons. It does, again, if you have any intentions on restricting your stuff in the future, once you release something under Creative Commons, it's forever. It's unrevocable. And a lot of people don't necessarily get that either.
So if you think that somewhere down the line you're going to have a CD you're selling at 3 a.m. next to the Tiny Ads commercials, infomercials, you're going to have your infomercial to sell your CD of all your podcasts.
Yeah.
That would hurt you there. Of course, you'd be delusional to think that would be the case.
Well, I still could sell the CD. It's just I'd be competing with myself and with the free copies that are all circulating out there freely and legally. So you have to think about what your goals are. And there are different Creative Commons licenses for different sets of goals. Some say that you can, you know, hack up the content all you want to. Some say you can't. Some say it's okay to use it for commercial purposes. Some say it isn't. With mine, I say it's not okay strictly because I'm paying the authors, and they're paying me specifically for a very limited use of the story. And I mean, I don't have rights to use this in print. I don't have the rights to go and alter their content in any way. I only have what I contracted with them. Therefore, I can't give anybody else those rights either.
How do you make the final decision on which stories you choose?
Actually, that process is actually in flux right now. Just like any other science fiction magazine, you know, we have a submissions review process, and I've drafted a few friends of mine into other writers into volunteering to read the slush pile with me. So we go through a first round, just looking for stories that may be suitable for us. And it's not necessarily good writing, bad writing. It could also be, you know, fits the kind of tone and style that we're looking for. It could be a matter of pacing. That's kind of a first cut. And then anything that is sort of a possible for us gets passed into a folder for me to look at. And then I read through every one of those and I start thinking, okay, I start visualizing in my head, how could this be read out? Who could read this? What would it sound like? Is it too heavy on dialogue? Is there not enough dialogue? Is it too slow? Then I just sort of go by instinct and make a determination from that. I've rejected a lot of stories that I really liked. And that's probably the part of the job that hurts the most, is when there's a really fun story or a really, really good story, but it's just not right for the podcast.
How do people go about submitting to you just so they can be rejected?
Why? Or better yet, be accepted. The submission guidelines are on our site. Again, escapepod.info is the place to look there. Right on the left side of the link, there's submission guidelines. You can just go to escapepod.info/guidelines if you want the direct URL. Now, that says, in very general terms, what we're looking for, the email address, which is submit@extraneous.org. I've got to get that switched over, too. Yeah, they just send us the stories and email.
Finally, what advice would you like to offer out to someone that's looking at doing a sci-fi podcast?
First of all, you have to be passionate about the subject, whatever specific topic you've chosen. If you're not interested in it, then you're not possibly going to get anybody else interested in it as well. Also, whatever your theme is, make sure that you present that theme very strongly from the outset of the story. If there was one piece of advice I could give to podcasters in general, all the administrative stuff about, you know, I'd like to give a shout out to these other podcasters and all that stuff, put that at the back of your podcast. Because you have to make the assumption every time that someone is listening to your podcast for the first time. And if the first 10 minutes are talking about other podcasts, playing other people's promos, and just general community chit-chat, then they're going to think, well, what does any of this have to do with me? And they're going to kind of zone out. But if you get them hooked on the subject first, you can still talk about that stuff, but you have to present the meat of what people are there for first.
Good advice. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, folks, that concludes our interview with Steve from the Escape Pod podcast. I highly recommend you check out this podcast at escapepod.info. If you're into sci-fi, you're going to love it. If you're a fan of Merle Lafferty, the current podcast up there right now is a story read by Merle Lafferty. So I highly recommend go over to escapepod.info and check out this podcast. You'll be glad you did. And Steve, once again, thanks for coming on the show. At the end of today's podcast, we're going to play a promo from the Canine Cast, and they talk about how you can help out the animals that have been stranded and abandoned down in New Orleans. So please stick around at the end of the show for that PSA from the Canine Cast. One piece of news note I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, and that is if you're a podcaster, I've gone ahead and updated the directory of directories. We now have over 66 different podcast and video blog directories, and yes, I am adding video blog directories to that, so if you're starting to do video blogs, my directory of directory will let you know where you can submit your podcast or video blog to. As always, you can find our directory of directories from the main page, podcast411.com, and over on the left side under For Podcasters, there's a button. First one says Directory of Directories. Previously, I had asked for feedback on how you explain or issues you have or concerns you have trying to explain what podcasting is to the general public. Please send me your feedback to podcast411@gmail.com. Today, we're going to play feedback from Mark Kelso from PotterBlogger.com. Here is Mark.
Hey, Rob. Good question. How do you tell somebody about podcasting? Well, I've kind of given up a little bit. What I usually do is say, hey, do a Google search on it, and hopefully that stimulates enough interest. Because, if you know, my problem is if somebody looks at me, I'll just tell them, and And then I realized that they don't get it. It's interesting how many people have responded with the answer of, I don't have any time for that, which is just the opposite. It's like, don't you commute for 60, 90 minutes? Don't you want to listen to something better? So what I have done is I've actually loaded up a friend's pocket PC. I carry one, and for work, if we're in a boring meeting, I'll just take a guy's flashcard and put some podcast in there. So, and that's been cool. The biggest problem right now is broadband and internet access. And, you know, if you're on dial-up, forget it. And a lot of people out there, when it comes to internet, they just check their mail, and that's it. So the younger generation's definitely the ones doing that are going to push this forward, and they're the ones that get it right away. And the other thing is you look at somebody with a computer. I'll go into a place, and if I see somebody with a computer in a coffee place, you know, with internet access, I'll ask them, hey, do you know anything about podcasting? And they do. So it's almost like you have to have a computer to get it. And anyways, thanks for all your good work on your show.
Mark, thanks for those comments. And that's going to do it for us today on the show. Please stick around again for the PSA from the Canine Cast on how you can help those animals that have been stranded and abandoned down in New Orleans. As always, this is your host, Rob, from Podcast 411, reminding you to listen different.
Hi, this is Tara from the Canine Cast Dog Podcast at caninecast.com. Have you ever wondered what happens to animals in these emergencies? We see pictures of them all over the news, but who is there to help them? What happens to the animals that cannot go along with their owners to the shelters or the ones that escape during the disaster? Well, the answer is there is a wonderful organization called Noah's Wish that exists for the sole purpose of helping animals during disasters. They do everything from helping to evacuate the animals beforehand to helping to rescue animals in distress after the disaster and then holding on to them in a shelter until such time as they can be reunited with their owners or until they find new homes. If you could please help out Noah's Wish, they have over 400 members currently dispatched to help out in areas that have been affected by Katrina, and they could really use your help. The Noah's Wish website is at noahswish.org. That's noahswish.org. If you go to that website, you will see a button set up for Hurricane Katrina and will tell you what they're doing there and what's going on with their efforts. In addition, they also have a button specifically for Katrina donations that will bring you to a page which will tell you what they need. Monetary donations are a big help, but in addition, they also have other special needs that are listed there, so you can donate either monetarily or by sending them some of the equipment that they might need. We at the Canine Cast have donated to this worthy cause, and we hope that you do the same. Thanks for helping to take care of the animals in this disaster.